Hello.
Hello. My name is Janie Conwell.
Hi, Janie.
And I am currently a resident of the Winfield section of Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. And what brought you to the library today?
Oh, I came to use the computer.
Cool.
So while I was here, they suggested that I stop over at your little booth and talk about this recording session.
Yes.
Which is sort of interesting. So I decided to pick questions from your cards here, and I've selected this one on work. And I'm sitting here trying to think back to my first job, which I'm a recipient of one of the government programs because I was one of 11 kids, 8 girls and 3 boys.
Well, where were you in that line?
I'm number 5.
Okay, so you're like right in the middle.
2 older brothers, 2 older sisters, and then there was I. And the family was perfect. And then my mom went crazy and had 5 more. No, she had 6 more. And yeah, and it was pretty rough too. It's pretty rough when you're a girl growing up in the 1950s, because when we were talking about work and jobs, and there was very little for a girl to do.
I mean,
boys could get jobs at the supermarkets. They could be bag boys. They could polish shoes. They could always work that little hustle. They could deliver newspapers. But for girls, there was practically nothing. I mean, maybe I was born in the perfect time for women's rights to slowly evolve, you know, because one thing I learned early is, being a woman, we were limited. We were restricted on what we could do. And slowly but surely, a friend of mine worked with this thing called the Neighborhood Youth Corps, government program that had started, and they worked 2 hours a day, but you earned $1.25 an hour, and you worked before and after school hours. So she sent me to see, I can't think of the gentleman's name. I just remember he had red hair and freckles. And black people with red hair and freckles are rare. But he, I was turning 15, going on 16 that summer. So he told me to go ahead and sign up for the program, and he'd try to get me in. I don't know, maybe he adjusted my birthday. I'm not sure, absolutely sure of that, but I know I started with the housekeeping unit, and I was assigned to Martha Washington Elementary School, and that was an elementary school I had attended. And the first day on the job, I'll never forget it, I went there, and we were supposed to mop the hallways, the corridors, and I think my mop weighed 110 dry. I weighed 98 pounds.
Oh,
the mop was 110 before I put water on it.
So heavy.
I don't know, but I know I scrubbed that floor like it was no tomorrow. I was so glad to have a job. I was so glad to earn some money. And I mean, back in that era, $1.25 an hour was big bucks. And we washed all the blackboards on every floor and every room. And I just remember the housekeeping staff sitting there smoking cigarettes and laughing at us while we were doing all the work. But at that time, I didn't care. I was just glad to have a job.
They were laughing at the new people? Or
us, the workers, because we were assigned to them. We were supposed to be helping them.
Huh,
but they let us do all the work. Dump all the trash cans. And then the guys would come around, pick the big bags of trash up after we clean out every room. Mm-hmm. And we just did the housekeeping part of the school. But that was the first job.
Did you decide that you wanted to get a job, or did your parents push you to do it?
Oh, no, I needed a job. My mother was a housekeeper. She stayed home all the time. She was trying to raise those 11 children in a 2-story row house. She should have stayed in the southern states, but I gather we got out of that south and never looked back.
Were you born in the south?
No, we were all born here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was born at my first city job, the hospital, the Philadelphia General Hospital.
Yeah.
That used to be on 34th and Civic Center Boulevard.
Yeah.
And then that was the first city job that I had. Well, I became a civil service employee later on. And
at the same hospital where you were born?
Yes.
Yeah.
First time. And that city job undermined all of my clerical skills that I learned which I was going to go into the clerical field anyway, except I learned how to type an electric typewriter. By the time I got to the city of Philadelphia, they only had manuals. I didn't even know how to operate the darn thing.
When was this?
This was in 1960, 1978.
We didn't have electric typewriters.
No, the city of Philadelphia, they had manuals. They were, the city was behind in everything.
Yeah.
The city has always been like that, though. I stuck with civil service. I eventually got out of the clerical field because by the time I retired from the city of Philadelphia, I came out as a commercial and industrial fire inspector, too.
Oh, wow.
We inspected, like, all commercial establishments for, we enforced the city's assembly use occupancy code, daycare codes, all the fire codes that involved hotels, restaurants, every kind of commercial establishment. But because Philadelphia at one time was a huge manufacturing city,
yeah.
We made everything here. We made boots, shoes, hats, coats. But slowly over the years, and that job alone showed how industry was leaving the city, and the enforcement of the city's fire code was slowly becoming obsolete because we didn't have the quantities of manufacturing flammable materials that the fire department had to monitor, because they so slowly everything became fire resistant, fire retarded, so they were like slowly pulling away from it.
Mm.
The only thing that managed to survive under the radar were after-hour clubs or illegal establishments. You know, where the neighborhood told the city of Philadelphia where these activities were going on, because the city would never find them.
Yeah.
You don't put a sign up to say you're going to have a rave here at this club tonight. The city had to, someone had to tell the city where this activity was going on.
Hmm.
But most of my career was through the civil service system, but it all started with a government program called the Neighborhood Youth Corps.
Hmm.
And to this day, I am really, that's why I'm not, when people talk about government programs and the purpose of them and what they are for, I totally and completely understand and use something. Nobody ever thinks about that little 13-year-old girl who needs a job, you know?
Yeah.
Because I used to try to babysit to earn money. But you had to watch 15 kids for one person to pay you for just that weekend. And you done set every, you done babysat everybody's kids, but everybody owe you money.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't pay you, they just owe you.
Yeah. What neighborhood of Philly did you live in when you got that job, your first job?
West Philadelphia.
Hmm.
I came to the Winfield area from West Philadelphia, around 42nd and Fairmount.
Oh, yeah.
Which is sort of like the bottom part of Lancaster Avenue. So most of it I knew. And, well, you have to understand, the city of Philadelphia had, we're not going to call them segregated neighborhoods, but they were redlined. There were areas you could live in, areas we, and it's not that you couldn't live in it. They would just say you couldn't live in it,
right.
But you couldn't get a loan.
Right.
And I'm sure that if the realtor brought the wrong family to look at a house in this community, that realtor would not get any more houses to sell out of that neighborhood. And that's how they sort of kept the neighborhood isolated and segregated the way they were,
mm-hmm.
which at the time I had no idea it was, because it was just growing up. You grow up being a kid,
mm-hmm.
and all the other things that regulate your quality of life go on around you. So you sort of...
It's like you're not in direct...
It's not in your face.
Yeah.
People have to tell their kids that there are limits and restrictions on where you can and cannot go.
Mm-hmm.
As teenagers, you stumble across it. Like when you accidentally go to a party in the neighborhood where you're not truly welcome, well, then you have to run out of the neighborhood to get back to your safe area.
Did that ever happen to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, little Italian kids chased us through the graveyard at 47th and Lancaster a couple of times. And then you always took the long way, what they call the long way, which is like the back way,
yes.
to get up to 52nd Street. Yeah, you figure out a way to navigate your community without having to run through your community all the time.
Mm, that must have been so scary.
When you're a teenager, it's fun.
Yeah.
You think it's scary, but it's fun.
Hmm.
Because you're going to do it anyway. Your parents tell you not to do it. When you get two of your friends again, they're going to goad you on, so you're going to still go ahead and go.
Yeah.
But you just got to be prepared to run from the other side. Because there were movie theaters on the other side that you had to get to, like the Locust Theater was on 52nd Street.
What was the part that was like, that you didn't want to go through? Like which, if you were coming from 42nd? 52nd.
You wouldn't go any further than 45th in Lancaster.
Huh.
When you get to 46th in Lancaster.
Any further west.
Yes.
Yeah,
because that little pocket, it's called Little Italy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
oh, wow.
There were all Italians that lived in that little pocket.
Yeah.
And you just had to navigate your way to get through there to the other side of 52nd Street.
Huh.
Just look at it now. It's like a 10-block area?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if you really want to see something weird about it, you see how the two universities have merged on 42nd and between 38th and 42nd Street, coming to Lancaster Avenue.
Where Drexel and Penn meet?
Yeah, right where they meet. And every now and then, you'll see some of the students slowly wandering up that part of Lancaster Avenue, and they still stick out like a sore thumb. But I think the kids are older now because their world is just open. You know, their world is way different than ours. I don't know. I don't think the parents had too much to do with it, but the kids just sort of had it in their mind that you just weren't supposed to be in this area. So I think the kids enforced what the parents, somebody had to teach them that. So I blame it on the parents always.
What do you think parents are saying now to their kids?
I don't know. I think because there's so much of our society that is more open now, more accepting. And I think slowly but surely, one person being better than another person is now, I'm not going to call it obsolete, it's just, you know, it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see, I think the more integrated our society is, the more integrated our culture is, it's more open. And somebody had made this comment about once Obama was president that we no longer have segregation, but it's not so much as segregation to where your government actually participated in the enforcement of this type of thinking. Because to this day, I can never accept totally Jim Crow. I mean, like, there had to be legislators that voted for this. People that said, oh, yes, this is a good idea. And I'm thinking, who were these people? I mean, like, how do you, who? You know, cause you'll never get separate but equal because everybody wants something to be a little better than. So no matter how hard you try, as a matter of fact, it wasn't until recently a coworker of mine moved to Virginia, and she was telling me about her niece's school. Her niece was the black prom queen. I said, what do you mean the black prom queen? She said the prom queen. She said, no, they still had that white prom queen and the black. I'm thinking, wait a minute.
I remember you telling me that.
And she,
that's so crazy.
It was just recently when they just, because they were talking about the newspaper and they finally did away with it. But I'm thinking, but I couldn't convince her of that. When we were on the phone, I just couldn't convince her that that was not a good idea.
Yeah.
For you to just go ahead and accept it. Y'all should have been done away with that. Wait a minute.
Yes, when we read Drexel.
And that was when I came with that book, Once Upon a Time We Recovered. I was looking for the book to donate to the Winslow Library's book club.
Really?
Yeah, well, you can't donate the books because May always wants you to work it.
Yeah. May's the president of the Friends Club, yeah.
Friends would love to volunteer. That's too much work. I'm going to sell no cookies. I don't want to sell no candy. Here, donate some money.
Do you ever help them out with Friends stuff?
I donate stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
she always wants the body in the seat.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I mean, yeah.
That is true. You do need that kind of support. But would you volunteer with Frances? You end up volunteering for too much stuff.
She wants you to work.
But she'll volunteer you to the last minute. Even when the event is over, it's over. Everybody's leaving at 10 o'clock. Well, she's still there packing up stuff at 11:30.
Yeah. Well, it's really generous of you to, like, help out in the ways that you do.
I try to.
Yeah.
My heart's in the right place.
Can I ask you one more question before we finish?
Okay.
I like to always ask everybody. Who is someone that you're really grateful for, and why are you grateful for them?
Is there someone that I'm really grateful for?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I got to say something good about someone.
Yes. My favorite.
Oh. Oh my goodness, this is really tough.
It might be a hard question too, because you could be grateful for a lot of people. So you can pass if you want.
Well, I have a niece, a little niece of Kwanzaa, who started a little organization called Girlfriend Therapy. Because the first bunch of nieces just ran out and lost their minds. Then the second bunch of nieces. But this one, little one, she always just seemed to have her head on straight.
Yeah.
And she started an organization called Girlfriend Therapy. And they have their own little website. But it's sort of a little religious little group where they get together. They have every year they have an annual convention, and it's free. She offers it free. She tries to get sponsors, and they just talk about issues that concern young women and growing up and trying to find jobs and dealing with the stresses in their life. And she tries to encourage them to get a faith-based, you know, system going on in their life, something that'll keep them focused and keep them motivated. And I kind of like her little outlook on life. You know?
Yeah. She sounds really driven and generous.
Yeah.
How old is she?
Oh, I think Kwanzaa should be in her 40s now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it hard to think of them in their 40s when you've known them since they were babies. They just tend to never get out of those teens, but
they'll always be babies.
Yeah. She raised her children, and both of them, her son and her daughter, both went, because every now and then I see their little pictures they post on Facebook. I don't do too much Facebook. As a matter of fact, AARP helped me delete everything that I could off of Facebook.
That's so bad.
I don't even, all I know how to do is click that button and say like.
Yeah.
That was the end of my Facebook skills.
That's all we need. Janie, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate talking to you.
Okay.
Can I take your picture, too?
Oh, sure.
And I'll include it.
Do you want to